Your On the Mark podcast is loading now. The On the Mark podcast is sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company, family-owned dealership since 1915, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, on Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. News Radio 1070 WKOK presents On the Mark. It's a chance to voice your opinion on the events that affect life in the Susquehanna Valley. Call 1-800-795-9565 or email onthemark@wkok.com. Now, here are your hosts for On the Mark, Mark Lawrence and Ben Reichle.
Greetings and welcome on board the WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show, On the Mark. I'm Mark Lawrence, subpar host of the show. Across from me is Mr. Football, Ben Reichle, local businessman, Republican committee person. He's a natural-born free thinker. Although somebody told me the Freedom From Religion Foundation has commandeered the free thinker phrase, and they use it for individuals who are atheists. Did you know that?
So they are freedom from non-thinking?
I'm not sure. Free thinkers.
Oh, free thinkers that are non-thinking.
Well, they're not religious. They are definitely thinking. Rob Sanders, our fabulous producer.
You know what, Mark?
What's up?
May God bless them.
Well, anybody can appreciate that. All right, well, we have some fabulous guests here to talk about the Convention of States. So a lot of folks just turned to the radio and said, the what? And we are definitely going to be talking about something that is gaining momentum. It's going to be very much in the forefront over the next couple of years around here, and our federal government could change for the better if it is implemented and passed and the convention happens and the positive changes take place. So we're going to be talking about that very shortly. On the Mark is sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company. You can check them out at sunburymotors.com. After our guests get some of their words in, we'll open up the toll-free line, 1-800-795-WKOK. You can email us anytime at onthemark@wkok.com. And you can text us at 70236. Our first guest is John Shipman. Folks know him. He's a local businessman, a wise investment counselor. We've seen him at a couple of places over the years, and he is just very active in the city of Sunbury and is a Spark person and the Albright Center and a wide range of other things. But he is, if nothing else, politically and just as an American, informed on the goings-on in Washington and Harrisburg and knows good government when he sees it. He certainly knows when he doesn't, which is more often than not these days. He's here to talk about Convention of States, so welcome aboard.
Thank you, Mark.
I appreciate you coming in. And Steve Davies joins us. He's the Pennsylvania State Director of the Convention of States of Pennsylvania. So welcome aboard, sir.
Thank you. Good morning.
I really do appreciate you coming in. Convention of States, can I ask you to define it, Steve, so we can tell folks what we're talking about?
Sure. So in Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution is the process that we follow when we want to amend the U.S. Constitution. And it's a two-step process. An amendment has to be formally proposed. And once formally proposed, it is then sent to the states for ratification. The proposal step, there's two ways an amendment can be formally proposed. The first step is by a two-thirds vote of both chambers of Congress, and all 27 amendments that we currently have were originally proposed by Congress. But there's another way for an amendment to be proposed, and that is through what's called a convention for proposing amendments. If you read Article 5, it specifies that the state legislatures may petition Congress, may apply to Congress for a convention to be called to discuss and possibly propose an amendment to the Constitution. That process has never been used. We've gotten close several times in our history. And what this project is all about is getting 34 states, which is the requirement for a convention to be called, two-thirds of the states to call, petition Congress for a convention, and have a convention called, in fact, around three topics. There are three topic buckets that we are advocating a convention be called for. The first one is term limits on federal officials, which would include the judiciary, Congress and the judiciary. The second bucket is any form of fiscal restraints on the federal government. And the third bucket, for me, is the most important one. It's a very broad catch-all category that says anything that would reduce the scope, jurisdiction, power of the federal government would be germane. So our belief and our hope is that when the delegates get to a convention, they can have a robust discussion around a range of issues and potentially propose amendments that would address the major problems we have with the federal government right now.
Legislation pending in Harrisburg that calls for us to get on board?
Correct. The process calls for the states to pass an application. It's an act of the state legislatures. There's no action by the governor or anyone else that's necessary.
And he can't veto it.
That's correct. He can't veto it. He can't
Yay.
Stop it.
That's a miracle.
What has to happen is it's a concurrent resolution. The resolution currently is H.R. 206 in the House. And SR 234 in the Senate. There is actually going to be a joint committee hearing on both resolutions next Tuesday at 9 a.m. at the Capitol. And once those resolutions pass, then Pennsylvania will join the list of states that have already passed the resolution. And once we get to 34, then there'll be a convention call. Right now we're at 15 states. We hope Pennsylvania will be number 16.
And how many states so far?
15.
Oh, okay. So we got a long way to go.
We do.
But Pennsylvania should have momentum. And if anything's a no-brainer in Harrisburg, it would have to be this.
You know, you would think when I first got involved in this, my reaction was it should be something that that would enjoy a fair amount of support in Harrisburg. It's not legislation. It doesn't involve money or taxes. It doesn't require any action by the governor, and in fact, it would result in measures being taken that would transfer power and money and scope, if you will, from the federal government back to the states, consistent with original intent. And it was apparent to me that any legislator, you know, should be in favor of that, particularly since it would benefit tremendously the citizens of Pennsylvania. And so I've been working on this thing for about 5.5 years, and unfortunately, there are folks out there that fear a convention. They believe that it's going to result in some unintended consequence of great negative impact on the country. And so it's been a difficult endeavor in Pennsylvania and other states as well, not just here.
Steve, you talk about 15 states. Will Pennsylvania be the first Commonwealth?
I believe so. I'd have to think about that, but I believe
it's good
that's
to be
correct.
Number one in something.
Yes.
When you talk about this, and I think maybe the people who are having some angst might be the U.S. senators and the congressmen
people that don't have a term limit at the moment.
Exactly. So you're talking about term limits, but is it term limits for state and federal legislators?
No. This would just be federal. This is a U.S. Constitution issue. Mm-hmm. If we want to have term limits at the state level, we can do that via the state constitution.
The state constitution. So you look at term limits and you look at the fiscal responsibility. What will those definitions be? Will they be like states now have balanced budgets?
It could be that. There's actually another Article 5 convention effort that's been underway since the late 1970s. In Pennsylvania, there's 27 states that have passed that resolution, so it's much closer to 34 than we are. Pennsylvania actually passed that Article 5 resolution in, I believe, 77 or 78. So we're one of the 27. Pennsylvania's already adopted one of these resolutions, and at some point, they very well may get a convention called just for a balanced budget amendment. Application would include that, but it could be broader than that. It could be things around forcing the Fed to use generally accepted accounting principles, and there may be other spending or taxation limits aside and apart from a balanced budget amendment that would make sense. So
you could see a possible audit of the Fed?
All of that stuff, yeah.
And you could see line item veto for the president?
Yeah, and you could even see something where the states or Congress would have the ability, I'm sorry, not Congress, but the states would have the ability to step in and actually take action on a federal budget that they consider to be unacceptable. It would have to be a large majority of the states, I suppose, maybe three-fifths majority, but that could be an amendment as well.
And number three, scope of...
The scope of the federal government around a range of programs, if you think about the enumerated powers in the Constitution and then take a look at everything the federal government does that is not consistent with that, then we would suggest, or our application would allow the delegates to have discussions about taking a program that currently is implemented by the feds, which very well may be unconstitutional, but let's clarify that this program or programs are specifically now outside the scope of the federal government. There's one in particular that I think is actually a potential winner for the states. I think we could actually get 38 states to ratify an amendment that would say, we do not need any help from the federal government or any other state when it comes to educating our children. So everyone should be able to agree with that. And so the Federal Department of Education, which only has existed for about 40 years, goes away. Under Jimmy Carter. I was in college then. It goes away, and there's no more federal taxing or spending or appropriations or Common Core or rules, regs, or anything else involving public education. You cut them totally out of that part of our lives. And once you do that, it's my view that we all of a sudden realize realize that, hey, we do have the power to control the Fed, and there's a whole long list of things after education that we need to have a conversation about.
Right. So who goes? Mark and I get to attend, or?
Well, that would be great, but the way the resolution reads for Pennsylvania right now is we would send a delegation of 5 individuals to the convention. Now, this is the way it's currently worded, and this can be changed by the General Assembly, obviously, as they go through the process of getting this thing passed, but it calls for 5 delegates. It specifically excludes the governor, any judge, member of Congress. They cannot be delegates from Pennsylvania. The way the process works is the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate each select 5 names. They don't have to be members of the General Assembly. It could be you two. It could be the 4 of us, whatever. You know, whatever.
Maybe wise to pick John.
Maybe John. John and 4 others. But anyway, so there's a total of 10 people that go on a list, 5 selected by the Speaker, 5 selected by the President of the Senate. The chambers would then pick 2 of those 5. They would vote for 2 of the 5. And the 2 that get the most votes are the delegates from that chamber. The next 2 would be alternates. Then, after that vote is cast, the Speaker and the President of the Senate would jointly select the 5th delegate off of that list. So that's how the 5 come out. Now, it could be 7, 9, whatever, but that's how it works.
John?
I'm in.
I was going to say, fiscal restraint, you talk about that every time you co-host here, and that's been a half a dozen times just lately, and we almost always talk about overreach by the federal government, and spending is a big part of it.
Well, we just talked about education, but look at the Department of Energy. That's it was also a Jimmy Carter initiative. Think about it. We were more dependent on energy now than we were before. The Department of Energy, if anything, has obstructed and slowed down energy production in the United States. Only when our current president removes a lot of the regulation, now we're the number one producer in the world. So instead of the Department of Energy being a positive, the Department of Energy should be named the Department of Anti-Energy, because energy production really shrank.
Well, I'll throw the EPA in there.
And the EPA as well, yeah.
So, you know, when you talk about environmental protection, look at Pennsylvania. At one point, it was the Department of Environmental Resources. So those resources in the environment were used to, you know, move civilization in Pennsylvania forward. Then all of a sudden it became the DEP, so protection. But, you know, I would agree. But what's interesting, though, on this is that the term limits and how those will be set up, because that puts Washington on its head. And as much as they would fight anything, those term limits are going to be fought.
But and they're critical, because even the good guys, after they're there long enough, get tainted. I mean, you look at some of the votes we've had on immigration and some of these other issues, and you got George Soros's people voting with the people from the Koch brothers and so forth. So when you get George Soros and his people and the Koch brothers people on the same side, they're against the American people.
No, it's called the swamp,
right?
And you see where and follow the money. And follow the money above. I mean, you look at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and look how inconsistent they are with local and state chambers of commerce, in what their economic policies they think will work. Right. But Steve, we talk about what is the hang up on this? That if people think they open up the Constitution, they think it can be torn apart and rewritten.
Yeah, that's the essence of the argument on the other side. And, you know, as you mentioned, there's no doubt that the swamp and those on the progressive left especially would really resist a convention, particularly for the topics that we have in mind. There are efforts out there, for example, to repeal Citizens United, and there's a progressive left movement, if you will, that supports doing something like that. I believe that the federal government does not want to see a convention happen, period. We have forgotten that the federal government has a boss. It's not the Supreme Court. It's us. And for us to go off and do something like this over their objections would be something that would be intolerable to them. And I do predict that when we get to 27, 28, 29 states, they're going to start paying a whole lot of attention to it. Right now, it's, for the most part, not on the swamp's radar screen. Every now and then, you'll see something come up about it. But when we get close to 31, 32, I think it's going to be a massive amount of resistance and fighting to prevent that 34th state from ever passing the application.
Well, in Washington, they say don't get in between a camera and a politician. I also say don't get in between a politician and their reelection.
Right,
because that's, you know, what 90% of them are down there to do is to get reelected.
That's
their lifetime pension. All right, well, we're going to keep talking about this. If you are in favor of Convention of States, you can call us now, 1-800-795-9565. If you are opposed to Convention of States, you can call us now, 1-800-795-9565. We'd love to get your view on this. This will become a bigger discussion in Harrisburg next week, and certainly in the U.S. in the years ahead. It is no wonder that the federal government is not interested in having the branch, the big fat branch they're sitting on, be trimmed in any way. So we are definitely going to be continuing to talk about that. Steve Davies is here from the Convention of States of Pennsylvania. He's the Pennsylvania State Director. John Shipman of Sunbury, a good local businessman and a politically astute observer, is with us. We'll take calls now, 1-800-795-9565. You can email us at onthemark@wkok.com and text us at 70236.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Welcome back to WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show, On the Mark. We'll take more comers, 1-800-795-9565. We're talking about Convention of States. Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution gives people an opportunity to call for a convention if the U.S. Congress, of course, as you might imagine, is so dysfunctional that they can't even imagine fixing anything. So therefore, people can
hold
do it.
Mark, what's broke in their minds?
I'm trying to think what's working. Answer this question, John Shipman. What's working well in Washington, D.C.? President Trump.
They're still collecting our taxes. That's about the only thing
that's
the IRS. Working.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. Yeah, and,
ooh, boy.
And of course, President Trump's very controversial.
Well,
so
hold it. The
there's not you.
Washington Nationals seem to be working well.
Excellent point. Right. But only because there's a separation of baseball and state in the U.S. Yeah. That's a good thing. All right. So we'll be talking about that. Steve Davies is here, Pennsylvania State Director of Convention of States, and John Shipman, Sunbury advocate for it. John, have you had a chance to talk to local legislators? Will we get some yes votes out of this valley?
I'm not sure. I have had a chance to talk to our local legislators, and they are very concerned about the Second Amendment issue.
We haven't actually talked about that yet on mic, so that's one of their concerns.
Right, and that's the big concern, that our, you know, a runaway convention, which would do something to hurt the Second Amendment. So, and Steve can talk to that in detail, but our local state legislators, I have had discussions with them. They both have expressed that concern. Trying to reassure them is going to be our job.
All right. The Second Amendment concern pops up.
Right. The theory, or the concern, I guess, is that the convention somehow would be in a position, once they're convened, to ignore whatever directions the delegates may have gotten from their respective states, and ignore the call from Congress, and proceed to discuss and propose amendments that would be outside the scope of the convention call. For example, doing something that would severely damage the Second Amendment, or it could be something, if you're on the far left, that would make abortion illegal. I mean, these are, you know, very much litmus hot button issues for certain parts of the of our citizenry, and there's a real fear that a convention, even though we talk about the three topic areas, that for some reason those would not be what's discussed in convention, and that the delegates would be free to discuss and propose whatever they want. I tell people that if a convention is called, that means 34 states. Let's say it's our application. 34 states have passed the application. Well, that means 16 have not. And there's no doubt in my mind that most, and maybe all of those 16 states, would tell their delegations, you will go to this convention and you will do everything you can to destroy it. We do not want these topics discussed. We do not want amendments for these topics proposed. So you will come in and you'll bring up anything you can think of in an attempt to run this thing into the ground. So I don't doubt that there's going to be that kind of nonsense going on in the convention. However, there will be rules of order. There will be recall provisions in state delegation applications. There will be things that the states can do to control their delegates. And if they run off the reservation, in many cases, the states can take action to deal with that. But at the end of the day, you know, it's going to be up to the presiding officers and the parliamentarian to keep this thing under control. And if they can't, then I would suggest they just suspend the convention, recess it, and we'll sort this thing out. But the point is that the delegates have no power to do anything other than propose an amendment. They can't pass anything. They can't change anything. All they can do is write stuff down on paper. And once the convention is over, those pieces of paper would then go to Congress for a ratification call. Then they would have to go to the states, and 38 states would have to vote to ratify. So there's no chance that anything that doesn't have very, very broad popular support is ever going to make it out of convention.
All right. We have two callers waiting. Bobby, go right ahead. You're on the mark.
Yes. Good morning, everyone. Yeah, I think it's a good idea. I mean, okay, like, we're here in Pennsylvania, of course, you know, and, of course, on the East Coast, and, of course, California on the West Coast and that. I mean, but I think, what, you know, what the point I'm trying to make is we all live in different areas of the country, and there's different issues, as far as local governments and Commonwealth and all that, of how the, I'm going to say, how the laws are practiced and how the laws are written and that. So I think it's a good idea for, you know, I'm going to say a reconstruction.
All right, we'll put you down for a yes vote. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
Appreciate the call, Bobby. Let's see, we got Lance is next. Thank you, sir, for calling in. Go right ahead.
Okay, well, this is Pandora's box that I don't want to see opened, that's for sure. And to explain here why old Rudyard Kipling, he had a series of poems about the gods of the copybook headings. And this was every school kid back when got a notebook. And at the top of the page was a little bromide, you know, like Stitch in Time, you know, Penny Saved and all that. And the overall wisdom of this is referred to as the gods of the copybook headings. And in this one is really it. And the gods of the copybook headings said, stick to the devil you know. And I really believe this is the case in this deal.
Right. Well, that's a sort of a bleak outlook.
Right, we're hopeless.
I guess what would have happened in 1775? Stick with the devil, you know. Okay, King, we'll stay here.
Oh yeah, I understand this, but in this case, I believe this is it.
All right, thank you so much, Lance. What's your reaction? You've heard that kind of remark many times, Steve, and then John.
Yeah, that is the essence of. You know, the Pandora's box scenario, I guess, or fear is behind virtually all of the opposition here in Pennsylvania and many, many other states. Were it not for that, I think we would be very, very close to 34 right now. I ask people, what do you suggest then? You know, we're heading over a fiscal cliff, and the people that are going to be the most adversely impacted by it, in many cases, aren't even born yet and haven't even earned the money yet to pay back the debt that we're running up. So to me, it's an untenable situation. It's immoral. What we're doing to our children and grandchildren and their children, and it's got to stop. So if there's something else that anybody who fears a Pandora's box can suggest that we can take action around that doesn't involve having to wait for every session of the Supreme Court to start and finish, you know, I'd like to know what that is. This is not a Pandora's box. We have complete control over the process. We the people do. And it's time that we recognize that. It's time that we recognize that we are not subservient and our lives are not controlled by five unelected people on the Supreme Court. That's just not the way it's supposed to be. It was never supposed to be that way. And we need to step up and have an adult conversation about what we're going to do to fix it.
Well, and I would
like to make one comment here. As we look at what's going on in Washington, I don't think anybody in their right mind can say things are getting better in Washington. We have seen actually an increasing pace of degradation in Washington to the point that the people don't matter. The politicians are now publicly saying, the Speaker of the House said yesterday, the people aren't going to get a vote. So, you know, they don't care what we think, and that's a big problem.
She did say that. I hadn't even thought about it in that context, but good point. All right, well, we're going to continue this conversation for another 15 or 20 minutes, so get your questions and calls ready. We're talking about convention of states where people can adjust the U.S. Constitution to the betterment. So we're going to continue that. This is WKOK Sunbury.
News Radio 1070 WKOK presents On the Mark. It's a chance to voice your opinion on the events that affect life in the Susquehanna Valley. Call 1-800-795-9565 or email onthemark@wkok.com. Now, here are your hosts for On the Mark, Mark Lawrence and Ben Reichle.
Greetings and welcome back to the KOK Live Telephone Talk Show, On the Mark. I'm Mark Lawrence. Mr. Ben Reichle is across me. Rob Sanders, our fabulous producer. We're right in the middle of a conversation that relates to Convention of States. Steve Davies is here, the Pennsylvania State Director, and John Shipman is here. Of course, he's a very active Sunbury citizen, former councilman, former treasurer of the city, and we see him over at Lone Oak Financial Services these days, helping out those guys there and making sure that that business is booming. And he is a Convention of States proponent. So we are going to continue our conversation about Convention of States. So we have unanswered questions, so we're going to talk about that. We'll launch into that. Let me remind folks, On the Mark is sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company, a family-owned dealership since 1915, 4th Street, Sunbury, and Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. You can email us throughout our show at onthemark@wkok.com, and you can text us at 70236. But you are welcome to call if you have questions or observations related about Convention of States. Maybe you, too, have some of the concerns that people have voiced about the idea of fiddling with the Constitution or bettering it or making it even closer to ideal. It's a pretty ideal document in and of itself, but could it be even closer to ideal with our hard work and convention delegates? So let's talk about that. Let's get that out there and talk about that. Start with Steve. This idea of an out-of-control convention where everything comes up and the Second Amendment and abortion and whatever else, that just can't happen. Folks go there with these three elements in mind, and that's what they can address, and that's it.
That's correct. The convention call by Congress will also be explicit about what's germane under the convention call. In the case of the Convention of States application, it would be the three topics we talked about at the top of the show: term limits, fiscal restraints, and reductions in federal jurisdiction and power. There's no doubt that other things will be attempted to be brought up and debated during the convention. There will be many states who don't want to see any amendments for these topics proposed. They would probably even prefer to see the convention not have convened and to see it fail. So I've told folks, I agree, there will be attempts to bring up things that are not germane. There will be attempts to damage the convention and to damage the effort. But there will be a presiding officer, parliamentarian, there'll be rules of order, and they'll need to maintain order. And that may be difficult at times. It may require the convention to be recessed at times. I can't predict what may happen. It'll no doubt be chaotic outside the convention hall, wherever it's held. But this is the way the framers wanted it to be when we get into a situation that we're faced with right now, where we have a federal government that has become so tyrannical, so overbearing, so oppressive, so disconnected from original intent that we have no choice but to step up and right the ship, if you will, irrespective of how they feel about it and irrespective of any action they may think they can take to prevent that. So, again, the framers set this up so that the states are the only ones that can amend the Constitution. The federal government cannot do that. There's no act of the federal government. There's no law. There's no regulation. There's no federal court decision or executive order that cannot be reversed by the collective action of 38 states. And so we've all forgotten that. The federal government doesn't want us to remember that, but they all have a boss, and it's not the Supreme Court, it's us. And we need to be adult enough and rational enough to have this conversation, and that's all a convention is a conversation. Maybe some things will be proposed in convention that'll improve the situation, at least directionally. But to not have the conversation, in my view, is unacceptable. And there's no reason to fear this. There's no reason to think that we the people can't control our destinies and prevent unpopular and unwise things from happening.
All right, so term limits seems like a no-brainer. Fiscal restraint sounds logical, but there's certainly people that love deficit spending. I mean, look where we're at now, so they might be opposed to this. Reducing the scope of government to things that are germane. Dig into that a little bit.
Well, we talked earlier about potentially eliminating the federal role in public education. And what I've told folks is if you take a look at the state agency directory here in Pennsylvania and go down the list of all the state agencies we have, any agency that we have is likely constitutionally not an agency that should exist at the federal level. Now, that's not to say that some things haven't changed since the Constitution was originally written, and there may be some technical or even environmental issues that require some level of national coordination, but there's no question that that much of what the EPA, for example, does is not in the best interest of Pennsylvania. And I think we need to have a debate, a conversation about many, many things that the federal government does as to whether or not we really want them doing that. And if we do, then we need to specifically authorize it in amending the Constitution and not let this happen through a series over the decades of federal court decisions that expand the scope of the federal government. The Commerce Clause is grossly misapplied right now. There was never the intent of the framers for the federal government to control virtually every aspect of commerce. That was not the original intent. That was not the way they defined commerce. That is something that really needs to be discussed in a big way. The 17th Amendment was a huge blow to federalism when the states gave up their ability to appoint their U.S. senators, and originally it was the state legislatures that did that. When that changed in 1913, the states gave up a lot of control and power and influence over what goes on in D.C. I don't think the 17th Amendment will ever be repealed. However, there are amendments that could be written that would effectively restore the intent of the 17th of the original appointment clause in the Constitution relative to U.S. senators. We can get the states in a position where, if they don't like, for example, a Supreme Court nominee, and the Senate may be inclined to confirm that, well, perhaps the state legislatures have another view. And so why not have a provision in the Constitution that would allow the states to be the ones that confirm Supreme Court justices rather than the U.S. Senate? So everything the Senate does, to me, is fair game for an amendment to correct what I think was a huge mistake in the 17th Amendment.
Well, I'll direct this question to John, but really it's for our whole panel here. I think the Department of Education probably has done something good somewhere, somehow. Unfortunately, I can't name it, but maybe just to make sure that we have some standards that we're complying with. Department of Energy has done a few things somewhere, somehow. I'm almost certain of it, although I can't name any. And I know EPA has done some good, nationwide to make sure that there are some checks on development and on some states that want to overtax our earth. So those are areas. What's your reaction when you hear that, this idea? And of course, these particular agencies aren't yet targeted, so this is just our conversation at this point.
Every one of those federal departments has overreached even the original intent. You take a man out in the West who wants to put a pond on his property for livestock. He ends up fighting the federal government hundreds of thousands of dollars. They arrest him because he built this pond on his land for livestock. This is the EPA out of control. Have there been some good things? I think we're all in favor of a clean environment. None of us want to live in a dirty environment. The United States has some of the cleanest air and cleanest water in the world. But the EPA really can't take total credit for that. We do need some watchdogs, but there need to be limits. And why do we have a state EPA and a federal EPA? We don't need a federal EPA. Why should somebody from Arizona tell Pennsylvania farmers what they should do when somebody from Pennsylvania, who's right here, has a much better grasp of that? So the point is, let's, and Steve's already brought this up, if the states have a department for that, why do we also need a federal department that's doing the same thing or making the problems worse? We should get rid of the federal government and let the states manage their own business. Now that's not the case.
Okay. Ben?
Well, maybe the best, all those
well, we got
groups can do, maybe the best you can say is they employed people and they paid taxes. Okay. I mean, that's about the best. But here's what
tax and spend.
Put this out. Has education, public education in the United States, since the Department of Education was formed, gotten better?
No.
Okay. Has our energy policy gotten better?
No.
Now, recently under this administration, it has, because it was forced to change. So we have a little positive there. As far as the EPA, again, is it resources, using environmental resources to help society, or is it protecting the environment against society? And maybe there's a percentage of both in there.
All right, we have a caller on the line. Dale, you are on the mark. Thanks for waiting. You're on the mark. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I think we're about 40 or 50 years too late. We're in a court. This is corporate America. This is not the people's country no more. That symbol with the scale, well, you can just throw that away. All the people we vote for represent billionaires. So I think we need to start at the county level. If we start at the county level and start stopping these corporations from, it's got to start from the bottom. It can't start from the top. And you're talking about starting from the top. Well, right now it's a free-for-all. They're all stealing it, you know, getting over. So, I mean, it has to start at the county level. It can't start at the state level or federal level.
All right, so fix our counties first.
Yeah, you have to have some bold people. Maybe put some Amish in charge of the counties. And then you might see actual, you know, credibility and integrity. Otherwise, you're just, it's all trash. The credibility of the total government is just in the trash. And you can't even speak to a tax recipient, because that's all they are. There's givers and takers in life, and they're all takers, and they're creating the rules. So I'll just tell you, it's a little bit too late for that.
All right, we got you. Thank you so much, Dale. Appreciate the call. We'll take more comers on this conversation. We got about 5-10 more minutes left with our guests, so call us now. We're talking about Convention of States. What's your reaction? What's your fear? What would you like to see the Convention of States address? Call us now. 1-800-795-9565 is the telephone number. 1-800-795-9565. You can email us at onthemarket@wkok.com.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
We'll be right back. Welcome on board WKOK's live telephone talk show On the Mark. We've got 5-10 minutes left with our guests talking about Convention of States. Then David Rose coming in, the state representative, will be here. So he's in the very earliest phases
John's going to confront him in the hallway. Get his vote here before he gets in here.
Okay,
right?
Steve will help. Yeah, this is pretty consistent with some of David Rose's views. Lawrence's worthless observation. We'll see what David says when he gets here. He's just finding out about this. He's still in the orientation phase in Harrisburg, but I'll tell you what, it is likely
Quick learner.
I think he's going to be a good legislator.
All right, we have a caller on the line. Last-minute caller, speedy dialers now. Steve's got to get back to
Butler.
Beaver County.
Beaver County,
Butler's just east of...
And you came all this way just for us?
Just for you guys.
Wow, thank you so much. You get a coffee mug. Holy smokes.
Beautiful drive on Interstate 80 at 5 in the morning, right?
No, I came in last night.
Oh, did you? Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for that. We really appreciate it. All right, Al, go right ahead, please.
Abraham Lincoln, I believe he had a quote after the Civil War. He said, corporations will be the ruination of this nation. And I think he saw the writing on the wall early, how the favoritism, you know, and kickbacks and the overpaying and anything else to do with, you know, term limits and how long you're going to be in business down there making the money. I think he saw that writing on the wall when he said the corporation would be the ruination of this nation. Because they started pulling out of here for the money and going over to China for your slave labor to save on the price of the product, which is all right, but it's not doing a thing for you, you know, for the people here in the United States.
Aren't those trade agreements, though? Isn't that the scenario you want to look at?
That's the
president's looking at. They got way out of control because China is a developing nation to this day, and they get all kind of, you know, breaks on that.
Well, what nation isn't?
All right. Well, let's put this in the form of a question for a good guest. Thanks, Al. Really appreciate the call. I am concerned about what international trade. Your response to the caller and your view on this.
Well, the primary thought I had to do with the comment about corporate greed, corporate, you know, I guess running the show. One of the reasons why that happens is because we've allowed way too much power to be concentrated in D.C., mm-hmm. and that gives corporations a huge incentive to do what they do, which is if you've got an entity down there, an institution that can pick winners and losers and adjust the playing field in your favor, then, yeah, that's what they do. My reaction to that is the corporations in and of themselves aren't really the problem. The problem is what we've allowed to be created in D.C., and we need to break that down and eliminate the ability for Congress, for sure, and the administration, the federal government in general, to pick winners and losers on the economic playing field.
If you look at the map and you look at the, what is it, out of 10, 6 or 7 of the most prosperous counties in the United States.
7 of them are in D.C.
Yeah, Maryland and Northern Virginia, right around D.C., because there's a trough there of, what, $3.4 trillion. If you can get 0.5% of that or 0.25% of that, you're living pretty large in your business. And then the other ones are around New York City, which is the financial markets. Right. So if these were around Omaha, Nebraska, Dallas, Texas, Shreveport, Louisiana, Boise, Idaho, if that was out there, then you would say, hold it. There's something of businesses contributing. But the government has become the ultimate contract to get.
That's right.
That's right. It's turned into the ultimate false god. It's mm-hmm. the altar that a lot of people worship at, and that's not the way it needs to be.
What should every man do?
Every man should go to conventionofstates.com, sign the petition. Whether you're in Pennsylvania or some other state, it works everywhere. Once you sign the petition, it'll be sent electronically to your state rep and your state senator. We have 50,000 petition signers already in Pennsylvania. We need many, many more. When I go in and talk to these guys, I take a stack of the names and addresses, and it does have an impact. So that's the place to start.
Every man and every woman. I'm corrected by my lovely bride.
Yeah, I was going to.
Amen.
But we'll say that. But no, this is a cause that has a great outcome. We had a caller earlier who says the genie out of the bottle. No. The genie's been out of the bottle. We just haven't known it. And now it's time to put the genie back in the bottle because this will this addresses the problems with the politicians. Even if we like them, and some of them you like, they are not accountable for the actions.
Right.
It'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
Steve, keep us up to date. You got an open mic here anytime. You can call in anytime you're in this half of the state. Visit us again. Thanks for coming all this way.
Will do. Thank you very much for having me.
And your coffee mug is on that shelf right over there on the left.
You.
Even though you aren't a regular WKOK listener, we know you'll be listening as this continues. And John, thanks for your help and getting us hooked up with this good
Thank
guest.
Thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
We got another Patriot coming in next. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show. On the mark, we're going to dispense with news headlines and encourage folks to go to WKOK.com. There are all kind of important headlines there.
That's really important stuff, huh?
Yep, and we had traffic gummed up for hours in Northumberland earlier this morning on Duke Street and on Route 11 northbound. All of that has cleared out. Now we're back to the usual delays there, and but we're done with the 10 to 15-minute delays.
Finish of that project, what?
Oh, my gosh. Thanksgiving's the end of the last phase, okay. And then paving next year. Oh, they're killing us. I am so glad to say that the newly elected state representative, David Rowe, is here. Elected in August, sworn in September, and hit the ground running is the understatement of the century.
Legislating in October.
Hit the ground marathoning. So he's cast votes and done things and named names and been the 85th District State House member for a couple of months. Welcome aboard, sir.
Hey, thank you so much for having me here, Mark. It's great to be here.
It's good to hear your voice again. Well, give us a quick synopsis of your first couple months in office.
Sure. So it's been a month. Just this past week, I hit my first month. It's been a lot of fun. You know, something that Fred Keller said that he was spot on about, among many other things, is that one of the best things about this job is the people that you get to meet. And he's exactly right that over the past couple of weeks and then, you know, back into the campaign season, whether it's meeting thousands of people at their doors, whether it's meeting people at events, whether it's going to having meetings at the office or in Harrisburg, giving tours at the Capitol, it really has just been a pleasure and a delight to get to know so many people here. Right after this, I'm heading over to Penn's Creek to visit a senior home to hear about their concerns, their issues. I'm on the Aging and Older Adult Services Committee. So I'm hopeful that there's some things I can work on for them over there as well.
With a hearing on Tuesday.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Among that, the committees that I've got assigned to, I've got the Children and Youth Committee, as well as the Finance Committee, and also the Local Government Committee. The Local Government was one I had specifically asked for as a township supervisor. I wanted to be able to hit the ground running with some firsthand experience on that.
So you have the seniors and you have the youths.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So young ones and old ones.
Exactly right.
All right. Well, let's take things in order which they presented themselves around here. The Convention of States, this is news to us, so maybe news to you, too. Some early thoughts about their efforts.
Mm-hmm. I actually did meet with some advocates for the Convention of States just the other week. It is something that I think that they are gaining a significant amount of traction on, which is encouraging to see. I am meeting with some legislators that are co-sponsoring the legislation down in the Capitol, hopefully next week. Maybe the week after. Going through the bill, I just had some questions about it, making sure that there is an objective that is maintained, adhered to. The bill has some mays in it and not enough shalls, according to my concern, making sure that we know for sure what we're getting into. I think it's definitely an exciting proposition. I just want to make sure that we do it right.
All right. So other pending issues in Harrisburg, are there any that kind of bubble up on your list?
Sure.
I brought up our list, the things that happen regularly.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the big things that we're running into is, I'm sure people are well aware of the governor's sort of executive decision to force Pennsylvania into the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, affectionately known as REGI, and the sort of complete bypassing of the General Assembly that he did with that. There are so many statistics out there that just go to show that this is the wrong way to go for a number of reasons. What we're looking at is a comparison of two very different perspectives in Harrisburg. We've got a tale of two agendas here. The first one being the governor has his perspective of his Restore PA plan. His intention is to try to address blight and infrastructure issues, all of which, very, very lofty objectives. However, his plan for paying with them is the imposition of a new severance tax on the natural gas industry here. He rightly points out that Pennsylvania is the only state without a severance tax, but he fails to mention that Pennsylvania is also the only state with an impact fee. He also tries to compare us to Texas, saying that Texas severance tax is higher than our impact fee, but he fails to point out that, unlike Texas, we have the third highest corporate net income tax in the nation at 9.99%, when Texas's is a big zero. So we are actually already charging almost double of our energy producing sector of what Texas is. So it's sort of a straw man argument there. So working on making sure we are keeping business thriving here, on the flip side of it, the House is working on the Energize PA package, which goes the exact opposite direction. Rather than raising taxes and increasing regulation, we're trying to create jobs, stimulate economic growth by doing the exact opposite. There's some really exciting bills coming out. They're all in sort of the 1100 range, if people want to look them up, 1100, 1101, 1102, all the way up to 1108. And a lot of them are just some really common sense bills. One of them simply creates a statewide database of abandoned manufacturing sites, so developers and realtors have sort of a central location to go to. Say you've got a client that, hey, I need 50,000 square feet within 1 mile of a rail depot, they'd be able to go right to that database and get all of that information.
Front Street, Sunbury.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly right. So a lot of these bills are not controversial, not difficult at all. They're simply common sense things to allow people to do business here and thrive. If you look at some of the numbers that of states that have joined the RGGI, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, California is a good one to look at. The Manhattan Institute did estimate that California's cap and trade program, which is essentially what the Reg E is, did raise residential electricity costs in the states by up to $540 million, and the impact on the average family of drivers is going to be an extra $500 or more annually just on gas at the pump alone. So these are the sort of things that are going to be the realistic outcome of what happens here. We're already looking at a natural gas recession. I mean, when we look at the entities that are already struggling, if it's Cabot, if it's the Chesapeake Energy Company, we're looking at reductions in personnel, in staffing, we're looking at closures of wells. Already the energy sector is struggling to compete here in Pennsylvania, and this is just going to make it harder for them all around.
And reducing our carbon footprint is already happening. This will essentially codify, mandatorize, and cap and trade is such a complicated thing, and you know, the average person doesn't get too involved in it, but we're already achieving a lot of these goals. I mean, drive outside Susquehanna University, they're, you know, utilizing one of these solar rigs out there. So some of these things are already happening, and the state can promote the things that are already happening, and does.
And you are exactly right on that. It was between 2009 and 2016, so just recently, the United States Energy Information Administration reported that Pennsylvania had already reduced its carbon footprint by 28%. And the majority of that simply came from the free market impact of the shift from coal to natural gas. So it wasn't necessarily any government regulation that made that happen. It was just the free market. And so that's what we need to be doing to empower people. When we address environmental issues, more regulation is never the issue. One really interesting visit that I had with a local small business, Ben, I hope you don't mind me bringing this up, over at LB Water. And one of the things that they're working on there is technologies to address failing infrastructure to address loss of water. And what was the number, Ben? 6 billion gallons of water lost annually?
Yep.
And, you know, you look at those numbers, and from the perspective of small businesses or environmentalists, they have the same objective, because we're trying to avoid, you know, LB Water's trying to avoid overdrain the water table, because that's where their product comes from, right? I mean, if you run out of water, that's not something any of us want to have happen, especially not the business that's in the people that are in the business of marketing it. So they're working on these exciting technologies to help mitigate that loss of water. And feel free to chime in, Ben. Tell me if I'm oversimplifying it.
No.
But that's going to help make a lasting improvement on the environment, and it's all through private enterprise. So we need to be encouraging private entities to be making these moves, not over-regulating them to where they can't afford to stay in business at all.
And we had that conversation last Friday, Mark, with
the climate folks,
Stacy
Richards.
And we talked about, just take water infrastructure. You know, you have a community that produces, let's say, for the sake of an analogy here, 10 gallons of water. And they send that out, and they get paid for 8 gallons of water. And someone says, well, what happened to the 2 gallons of water? Well, it leaked through this pipe. Hey, we just got a call on 2nd Street. There's a huge sinkhole. What happened? Well, there was a main break. The water was leaking. Well, it's been leaking for a year and a half, and you have to go find it. So, you know, those efficiencies, the private sector, maybe partnering with the government, the P3 programs, can help. Government in itself, it's tough because in government, sometimes not making a decision means you haven't made the wrong decision. But private entities tied in with government on some of these P3 programs, the public-private partnerships, those are positives. And I hope Pennsylvania, and David, I hope in Pennsylvania they can look at those partnerships for not only water infrastructure but sanitary sewer, stormwater. They did it with bridges, pretty successful, real successful overall, highways. But I know one thing we do have a problem with in Pennsylvania, and it's called the turnpike, because that is a 900-pound, I don't say white elephant, but it is a 900-pound problem within our state's infrastructure programs. So
what is it, $12 billion total debt, something like that?
Well,
it's crazy.
Whatever you got to do, let's get it done, because it's an embarrassment. Pensions, we see a pension crisis down there. But as we talked about before, Mark, it's the leadership. And I think the convention of states address that. Term limits, pretty interesting concept. Fiscal responsibility, geez, who would have thought of that? Government overreach. Yeah, geez, you know, so the states are trying to run their programs, and all of a sudden the federal government says, no, you got to do this. Oh, by the way, do that, and we're only going to give you half the amount of money it's going to cost you to do that. So it is sort of, this will be sort of interesting. And, you know, my question, too, is you've jumped into this head first. So there was no problem getting a parking space, finding the cafeteria or the bathroom then? You bypassed all that stuff?
Well, I did get very lucky. I was given Fred Keller's old parking spot, Fred Keller's old office. So I got really lucky there. And who knows, probably next year when they reshuffle everything, I'll probably get bumped to the broom closet and have to park at Wendy's. But for now, I'm very grateful for what I've got.
When it's time for your annual Frosty, you'll
right.
be there.
Exactly, so, right.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, sure. But we would invite folks to call us now. We're talking to the newly elected and sworn in with 3 months under his belt, state representative. David Rowe is here, the 85th District, lives in Lewisburg, and is talking about some of the big initiatives, the RGGI, what do they call it, the Riggy?
Riggy.
Riggy,
yeah.
Okay, well, that's a bad name for it, but it's a bad deal anyway.
I didn't make
so
it up.
I love the environment, and I don't like it, so that tells you something right there. All right, so we're talking about that. There may be some other pending issues in Harrisburg. You did the 1101, but we can talk about 1102. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, if you wish to. But we'll take all comers. What would you like to talk about, folks? We got a state representative here, David Rowe, in our studio. So On the Mark is sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company. It is a family-owned dealership since 1915, 4th Street, Sunbury, and Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Find out lots more about them at sunburymotors.com. They invite you to visit the Quick Lane on North 4th Street in Sunbury. They'll pump you up with nitrogen. They would just love to see you there. They got the alignment shop, the body shop, the parts shop, the great big truck shop, the little car shop, you name it. They got every kind of shop you could possibly want there, and a car wash. SunburyMotors.com. You got a road trip planned? Boy, check out Sunbury Motors. They'll get you ready for that road trip. Selling Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln. Sunbury Motor Company.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Welcome back to the KOK Live Telephone Talk Show. No comers in terms of conversation. See, every time we don't talk about impeachment, the phones go dead. So,
yeah, you can fill me up, Buttercup.
Right, we can sing along. Okay, so one of our listeners, we do have open phones. We are not talking about impeachment, and I am not going to ask David Rowe, State
Is there
Representative
reason
David
to talk
Rowe.
About that?
people have a different view on.
I thought that was a big Saturday Night Live skit down in Washington that's been going on.
Is not everything in Washington like Saturday Night Live?
Too much. Right. You're right.
Call us 1-800-795-9565 is our telephone number. That's 1-800-795-9565. You can email us at onthemark@wkok.com. One of our listeners did that, and here's what it says. It says, "And just what's so bad about having a plan to address crumbling infrastructure in our state by taxing the gas drillers?" What's the name of a Restore Pennsylvania? Yeah, that's the governor's idea. Haven't they had a free ride long enough? For some unknown reason, the Republican majority in our legislature have protested and obstructed taxing the gas industry for years. It's okay for them to be extracting and exporting the gas of Pennsylvania without paying adequate taxes. Methinks too many of the Republicans are owned and obligated to this industry. David Rowe, natural gas.
Well, so the concept of Restore PA, of addressing blight and fixing infrastructure, that's fantastic. That's things I'd love to see happen, but I think that's something that can be done, you know, especially addressing blight. The way you address blight is you reinvigorate a community economically. You don't put the give the taxpayers the bill. So just to address, you know, the saying that they've gotten a free ride long enough, just some numbers about the top natural gas producing states in the nation. We've got Oklahoma, and they have a total of state and local income tax. The burden, like their total tax burden, is 8.6%. Texas, it's 7.6. Louisiana, it's also 7.6. Even New Mexico, it's 8.7. In Pennsylvania, when you tally it all up, it's 10.2%. So trying to say that the gas companies aren't paying their fair share is nonsense, because they already pay more than any other gas-producing state.
9% corporate net income tax?
9.99% okay. Corporate income tax?
Drillers pay that.
Plus a 6.9% impact fee on that, and then you also factor in the realty transfer tax, the death tax, you know, income tax, and Pennsylvania is one of the highest. There's a, I forget what the institute was, just last week came out with a ranking of states, and Pennsylvania ranks 47th, so that's third worst state to do business in because of the tax rate, and I think we were only beat out, I think it was California and either Illinois or New York, I could probably guess, but yeah. I don't remember what number two was.
But the whole point about the impact fee is the impact of the drilling went there. So you had communities building new water, new roads, new, you know, parks. And remember, a portion of that goes to DEP, a portion of it goes down to Harrisburg already. So what's interesting about the impact fee and why I believe it is probably the best way to do this is you have Republican legislators in the Southeast moaning and groaning because they're not getting money. But you have the areas where the natural gas drilling impacted those communities, and that's where the money went. So there's something equitable about that.
And just what we were talking about on the break, those monies from the impact fee are going towards projects just like we saw in Snyder County the other day with the implementation of riparian buffers that's going to prevent soil erosion, that's going to help clean up the Chesapeake Bay. We're looking at the restoring of natural habitats and the returning of natural species to the area. All of these great things are being done with that already. So if we want sustainable and, you know, positive environmental impacts, that's the right way to do it. Like we were talking about, too much of the conversation about any sort of environmental impact has been consumed by talk about the Green New Deal and riding bikes and spending trillions of dollars that we don't have. When in the reality, the environmental impact we should be focusing on is exactly the things that the state is doing.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'd rather adhere to being a conservationist than being an environmentalist.
And you enjoy being a conservative. We know that's true.
Conservationist is the next step.
Is it? Oh, I don't know. Cindy, you're on the mark. Thank you so much for calling in. David Rowe is our guest.
Good morning, gentlemen. You know, I'm constantly hearing reducing corporate taxes, reducing corporate taxes, reducing corporate taxes. A couple years ago, they eliminated the corporate net income tax, right? Totally eliminated it.
No, not that. Which was the one they reduced? Hold on. They did reduce one, but not that one. Corporate net income tax was scheduled to be reduced.
Oh, stock and franchise tax.
Yes. There you go.
They eliminated it. Completely eliminated it. I apologize for identifying the wrong one. They constantly give them these KOZs and whatever they are, the T thing, all over the state. And so they pay nothing. The corporation out there building the cracker plant, $3 billion in tax breaks. So what I never hear from our legislature is, let's cut the average working Joe and Jane a break. Instead, what they've done over the last 5 years is give us the highest gasoline tax in the country, highest in the country. Raise the tax on our telephones in order to pay for a 911 system that's far beyond what the real demand necessitated. You know, it's just really ridiculous that they focus relentlessly on cutting corporate taxes and then turn around and tell the rest of us to pick up the bill. They're not willing to reduce the size of the legislature. They're not willing to cut the spending in Harrisburg itself. So they've just raised our burden and at the same time cut the people that are paying into it and turn to the rest of us and say, ante up, folks, let's go, line up here, empty your pockets.
Hold on, Cindy. David, this is one of your constituents.
Sure. So, Cindy, I completely agree with you. First of all, on the perspective of the corporate net income tax, the conversation about it has moved forward somewhat. Just last week, I did co-sponsor a bill to reduce it by 4% over the next 4 years. But I do also agree with you in that the corporate welfare that we tend to see becoming so prevalent in Pennsylvania has to stop. Pennsylvania does have the highest amount of corporate welfare handouts of any state in the nation. I mean, if we're talking about the $600 million that was spent to subsidize stadiums, the hundreds of millions that goes to the horse racing industry, the film industry that gets handouts, most of those, if not all of those, have been shown to have a minimal and a fractionary turnaround on investment for people and taxpayers in the Commonwealth itself. For the cracker plant, the House Bill 1100, because I know that was something that I talked to about several of my constituents, when that bill was on the floor, I actually did raise that concern, and I pointed out that we shouldn't be at the expense of the citizen taxpayers like you and me. We shouldn't be subsidizing business enterprise. The solution is a holistic approach to making Pennsylvania more business-friendly, to bring more businesses here, not to just give handouts. However, I think what I was told and what was correct after I did a little more digging on the bill is that for the 1100 bills, there is not a freebie, a handout, a subsidy. Rather, it is a tax credit. So what we're looking at is only after a business has invested a minimum of $1 billion and paid in a minimum of $100 million in taxes to the state, only then will they qualify for tax credits, and even those are only a fraction of it. So the hope is to take advantage of the cracker plant and not necessarily offer freebies. This isn't a KOZ. This isn't an exempt zone. Rather, it's just offering a tax credit after the investment has already been made that we wouldn't otherwise have.
But we have, as you enumerated, we have many tax breaks that we give to the corporate citizens in this, the corporate entities in our Commonwealth. But you'll be hard-pressed, aside from the exemption for senior citizens, to find tax breaks for regular working folk. And that's what the legislature needs to focus on.
All right,
not
thank
on
you.
How they can cut the tax breaks again for the millionaires and billionaires. What are they going to do for the everyday working people?
Thank All right, you. We got you, Cindy. Thank you so much.
Pennsylvania is better for having that cracker plant. That's the caller to go out to Beaver County and to look at what is going on out there. Far better to have more taxpayers, meaning more employees, than more taxes.
Lance, we got 1 minute. Go right ahead.
Okay, why? Rumor has it that there is a semi-auto ban bill on the floor of the House. Is that true?
Not that I'm aware of. It hasn't been introduced to my knowledge. If it has been introduced, I can almost guarantee you that it will not make it anywhere. And if it is introduced, I will be a most vocal opponent of it, but to my knowledge, it hasn't been introduced yet.
Good question. Legalized marijuana, there is a bill pending somewhere, maybe in the House, I don't know where.
Just a conference, Governor Wolf was somewhere.
Well, but yeah, do you favor legalized marijuana?
I do not, no.
Okay. First responders, there's a bill pending that could help first responders.
Yeah, these are actually some really exciting, there's an exciting bill package, and if you're free and you want to come down to the Capitol on Monday around 11 a.m., we'll be having a big press conference on Commonwealth Avenue. I think they're going to shut it down, bring in a bunch of fire trucks. It's going to be a pretty cool spectacle. A lot of these bills are to sort of, we all know that the volunteer firefighter count in Pennsylvania has been dwindling, and we owe these people so much for their contributions to our community.
You talk about the first responders; they are the heroes of
actual
the community.
Heroes.
Yep.
And
okay.
one of the exciting bills that's coming up that is one that would essentially give the first responders the rights to essentially get a tax credit or a write-off if they buy their own equipment, which I would have thought that was already in place. But I mean, if your fire station is struggling, you guys need new oxygen tanks, and you buy it out of your pocket, you spend, you know, hundreds of dollars on your own equipment, you know, that was too bad. That's your loss in times past. And we're hoping to pass this bill that would say, hey, you know what, if you buy something for your fire company out of your own pocket, you should be able to get a tax credit.
That would just
for
be
that.
State text.
Yeah, that would just
though.
Be state.
Okay,
right.
So that wouldn't help. Let's see, a heartbeat bill. If a heartbeat is audible, I think you said, then abortion would not be permitted.
Yes, yep. And Representative Borowitz out in the Lock Haven area is introducing that bill on Monday. I'm hoping to be present for that press conference. It'll be in the Capitol Media Center, so I'm assuming it will be live streamed, but I couldn't tell you off the top of my head where.
You support that bill?
I do, wholeheartedly.
What else? I guess that's it. I can't think of any other one. Red flags, bills.
My concern with red, and this is something that actually, of all the issues I ran into talking to voters at the doors when I was canvassing, this was one of the ones that came up almost, I would say probably the most frequently. My issue with red flag laws is that they are based in the uprooting of our justice system, in that the foundation has always been that a person is innocent until proven guilty. So the red flag law makes you then have to prove your innocence. Somebody I had a conversation with said, well, you know, what if my boyfriend, is violent and he wants to hurt me, then I should be able to take his gun away. Which, that's one perspective, but the other perspective is, what if your boyfriend is violent and you want to protect yourself and he tells them you're crazy, and then he gets your gun taken away and now you're defenseless. So the danger there is that we'd be disarming the innocent people, and the people who need their form of self-defense would be left defenseless.
Well, the red flag laws should throw up a red flag, the proposed laws. And the other part is, it's like the whole scenario is, what do you do if you're falsely accused? Then what's the mechanism to get your XYZ back, your ABC back? So again, the knee-jerk reaction, people haven't thought it all the way through from A to Z. They think from A to D, and then all of a sudden they want to propose laws.
The mechanism is a lot of money paid to several yes. different attorneys just to get your constitutionally enshrined rights back.
20 seconds left.
Sure. I just say thank you very much for having me. I just like to reiterate what I said at the very beginning, that Fred Keller was exactly right. The best part about this job is the people I've gotten to meet. I'm excited to meet a lot more people.
Who do you root for if it's Selinsgrove versus Lewisburg?
Oh, don't ask me that. Fred always told me when he would go to games that was one district against the other, he'd sit on one side for the first half, the other side for the second half.
Switch over. And where are you going tonight?
I will be up in Montoursville. Southern Columbia Tigers against Montoursville.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.